Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When I was a kid, my dad was a cop. You see, my dad was a cop in the 1980s in Sydney, which has been widely regarded as one of the most dangerous times to be a police officer in Australia. It was basically the Wild West. So I wrote a book about it. It was called Loose Units. And then we did a podcast about it. Loose Units Season 1 was an incredible experience, and we loved every minute of it. But it turns out that Dad did more than just patrol the streets. He plunged headfirst into the terrifying world of forensics. So on this season of Loose Units, that's what we're doing. We're going deep into the world of forensics and fingerprints and all of that good stuff. Well, I say good stuff. Actually, things got worse than ever. So strap in for Loose Units Season 2, Electric Blue. Hello and welcome to another episode of Loose Units, the podcast. This is Season 2, Electric Blue. And obviously this season we're talking about forensics. And forensics, as it turns out, is pretty stressful and messy. So we hope you're doing okay. The cases this season have been really morally fraught, to say the least. I'm Paul Verhoeven, your host, and I'm here with my dad, ex-cop, John Verhoeven. How you doing?
I'm good, mate. Very good. Okay. God, I find this is very intense, this forensic stuff.
Yeah, so full disclosure, we record these in batches. So what's happened is Dad's flown to Melbourne, and we've just recorded a couple of really stressful episodes, and I'm feeling shaky. Are you okay?
Yeah. Am I okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's full on, because you can't, it's visceral. It's,
yeah,
you know, it puts me right back into the whole thing, and that's like I'm there, because I have to be there to walk and talk everyone through it.
Yeah,
otherwise, you know, it's unscripted. This is from my memory, and it's etched into my psyche indelibly.
The way I described telling stories with Dad, and I hope you agree with this, Dad, is that, you know, when you can't be able to take the bin out, so you just start pressing the garbage down and down.
Good
and down,
analogy.
And it forms that kind of cube of shit.
Yep.
And then you peel off, it becomes like the rings of a tree. So there's stuff in there that you haven't thought about for years.
Yep.
And only when you're telling the stories, you're like me, when you're telling a story or watching a story, you are in the story.
Yeah.
So I hope that listeners are handling this okay. Now, over the past few weeks of this show, we've dealt with, you know, a lot of the kind of how-tos of forensics. We've talked photography. We've talked all kinds of things, but I would love to talk about one of your big early cases working in, what was it, search and assist?
A relieve and assist.
Relieve and assist.
Yeah.
Okay. Something fairly, it sounds pleasant, but
yeah.
I don't think it was.
It sounds sexual, doesn't it?
Relieve and assist?
Yeah. Like that could be the name of a massage parlor.
Sure.
We shall relieve and assist.
I was trying not to go there.
Yep.
But thank you
for
ruining that 3 episodes
That's
in. Okay.
Right.
What would you like to talk about today?
So I had a really, really nice suede jacket.
Sure.
And I kind of felt that it looked great.
What, can you describe the jacket?
Yeah, it was brown and suede.
But like, what cut are we talking? Are we like,
What do you mean, what cut?
I mean, in terms of fat, if people want to dress like you did back in forensics, if you want to use you as a style icon.
Okay. Well, I was very stylish.
Well, you can say that, but until I can Google this jacket, this isn't doing jack.
Okay, well, it was kind of mid-length. Does that sound right?
Where did it stop? Knees?
Perhaps.
Waist?
Knees. Give me a break.
You wouldn't wear a trench? Stylish suede trench?
Oh, look.
Like a bomber jacket?
I wasn't a gumshoe. I was a forensics. And to be fair, you know, I needed to look the part.
What do you mean, the part?
I don't know, but you just need it to be, you know, pretty cool.
Well, you're in plain clothes, I guess. Okay, oh, here's a question, and this is pertinent, because in episode one of this season, you mentioned that plain clothes officers took a great deal of pride not wearing the uniform.
Correct.
Right?
Yep, yep,
I mean,
yep.
let's be honest, it's kind of cool,
yep,
right?
Yep.
So, was there a bit of a pissing contest with the costumery, with what you were wearing?
Well, no, you just dressed nicely. But in forensics, we, you know, we'd always dress like, you know, sort of neat casual. Didn't wear ties unless you were giving evidence in court.
Sure.
But you just had this sort of man about town look.
I think I've seen the jacket. I think there's a photo of you holding me wearing this jacket.
Yeah, look, it was really nice.
It was like, it had a kind of like a suit jacket vibe to it.
Correct.
It was brown suede.
Correct.
You were wearing it with like a brown tie and a check shirt.
Correct. That's it.
And some like beige flares,
yep,
or something.
Yeah, flares.
In the 80s.
Well,
I mean, that's behind the curve, Dad.
True, true.
Looking for a cigarette pant at that point.
But I don't think I wore platform shoes. I think I got rid of those.
Really?
Perhaps.
Is it true you had an afro at one point?
I had an afro, yep.
Okay.
So, we rock up to this scene. Now, here, I'm going to set the scene.
Sure.
It's a very, very affluent suburb on the lower North Shore.
Do you know where specifically?
Greenwich.
Greenwich?
Which is a really... Do you know it?
No, when you say the lower
not
North
the
Shore...
Not the one in London.
No, I know that.
There's where
no,
like, Greenwich Mean Time
there's
is.
There's North Shore Mean Time.
No.
But if you're saying the North Shore, just for listeners who aren't from that area, what kind of a... Well, what's it like there?
Okay, well, look, it's is there such a word as salubrious?
There bloody well is now.
Good. So, if you can imagine Sydney... It's sort of the lower North Shore is, you know, private schools, leafy.
Yeah, very green.
A lot of water views. And this, it was in the afternoon, we were getting ready to go home. We had a call that a large portion of Greenwich had suffered a major electrical outage.
Sure.
So, with that in mind, the police rocked up and they found this particular house that was, I'd describe it as almost a mansion.
Yeah.
And they believed, because they had all these electrical people from the electrical services, the council, and they'd pinpointed the problem to a particular house in a particular street.
Okay. So, Greenwich, as a suburb, I'm guessing... pretty well off.
Very, very, very affluent.
Sure.
And beautiful. Okay. Gentrified, yeah. Big homes, mansions.
And this specific house, what
it was just magnificent. It was large. It was 1920s, set well back, views over the harbour, commanding views. And the house was pristine, apparently. It appeared to be immaculate.
Just quickly, when you say you get a call... And you're working in...
forensics.
In relief and assist.
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
You're not driving patrol cars, are you?
No, no. We were driving... Funnily enough, that particular day, we had a Ford station wagon. I don't think they have station wagons anymore.
I'm not sure.
And this had a lot of gear. You know, we had to be prepared for every conceivable situation that would get thrown at us.
Like Ghostbusters.
Not really, no.
You know, like a proton pack, and you have that little trap thing.
No.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
No.
No, because I think it's really going to market well if
no,
you're dressed
because
as a Ghostbuster.
We didn't have some zappy thing on our backs.
Excuse me? It's called a proton pack.
Yeah,
Dad.
Whatever. So, I was the driver, and I was driving this uber cool guy who had fairly long hair. He was a bit of a sort of a, kind of an aging hippie.
Okay, cool.
Maybe not hippie, but yeah, he had a bit of a bouffant happening.
Right.
And he was so laid back, he was great. He was so laid back that I never, ever, ever saw him get upset at any crime scene.
Maybe he was a ghost.
Maybe.
They're not really tied to the physical world, so they can't engage emotionally. You're wearing a brown suede jacket at this point. You're driving a station wagon through Greenwich.
And we rock up to this imposing house, and there were police rescue there, back in the day when police rescue actually were doing something or other. And they had all this emergency lighting set up, and it was really interesting because they hadn't restored the power to the at least this street.
Right, but it's daytime. Why do they need emergency lighting?
Paul, I'm coming to that.
Okay.
They didn't have emergency lighting outside. The emergency lighting's inside the house.
Okay.
You with me?
Yeah.
So we sensed, due to the extreme number of police there, that we were about to encounter something pretty interesting.
Now, just talk me through this. You guys pull up. Are you the only people from forensics?
Correct. Yep.
So, what kind of kit do you have in the back of the station wagon?
We had gear from Arsehole to Breakfast.
Sure. But...
everything.
right.
arson.
What I'm trying to get at is if people were to look back in their like mind palace and look back in this imaginary car at all their gear, because I've said proton pack, so I'm hoping they're picturing that. So you now need to give them an equally vivid equivalent from the real
look,
world.
Look, we had lots of gear. We had anal thermometers.
Right.
Which, guess what?
What?
We get to use one in this story.
Cool.
Well, you don't, but I did. But I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah.
So now that I've got everyone's attention peaked, because anal, you say anal thermometer and people go, fuck, that is wacky.
I mean, I'm thinking of calling the episode anal thermometer.
Yeah. But we'll come to that. So we got all our gear, all our little boxes, silver boxes with all sorts of things inside them.
You've forgotten what they're called, haven't you?
Look, it's a distant memory. So we go up and now the scene
yeah.
that we were confronted with was, to be honest with you, beyond, and this is one of the great, great stories. This is one of the great things that I saw in my career that is so... Now, so I'm going to take you on a journey.
Yeah,
you sounds
really,
like the Mighty Boosh.
Really slow. Oh, yeah, Dad's a Boosh fan. Just slow us down. So how many other cop cars are there?
Well, no uniform police, right. No detectives, no one bar the police rescue squad, and that the only reason that they were inside the house was to set up this incredible lighting.
For you.
Just for us. Like, no one can go in. So it's me and my partner and I, we go in. I'm the junior guy by far. I'm dressed in my immaculate suede coat.
You didn't put like one of those...
dust jackets?
Yeah.
No, because at first we just thought, look, let's just get a sense of what we're about to see.
But listen, the police rescue guys...
Yeah.
What do they drive, by the way?
Oh, massive white trucks.
They've
got everything on board.
Right.
Everything.
Right. Like, yeah. Do you reckon they have anal thermometers?
Definitely not.
Can't rescue someone with an anal thermometer.
We were the only people that had those.
I don't think anyone on iTunes has ever said anal thermometer this many times
but
in
listen,
the podcast.
Paul.
Sure.
I'm going to talk about the thermometer soon.
You'd better. Otherwise, this has been a very strange anal
thermometer. No, this story is so amazing. Can I paint the picture?
Please do.
Here... in this house
yeah.
was rubbish a meter high in every single room.
One story or two story?
Single story house. We'd come in up the side and round the back into this. It looked like an urban tip that had been left unattended for a long, long time, for years. And it was... visually shocking.
Was there a smell?
It smelt. It was a combination of shit and piss.
Ah, shiss.
And I'll never forget I had these new shoes. They also were suede. And I donned a really suave dust jacket.
Uh-huh.
And the senior guy, because I'm in training, he said, John... in you go. And I remember walking through this rancid, moist, stinking, shitty environment.
What's the floor like at this point?
You couldn't see the floor.
Right, so you're kind of stepping through. It's like the garbage compactor.
No, it was so bad. And I was aware, as I was trying to be as professional as possible, but I was acutely aware that my brand new suede shoes were being... ruined.
Love it.
Every step I took, they were being permeated with all sorts of body juices.
Yeah, remember that Elvis song, Poo Suede Shoes?
And anyway, what I began to realize is that, well, the most terrible thing about this, well, there are many, many facets to this story that are quite frankly horrendous, but I remember looking over and I saw what appeared to be a woman in a dress cut into with massive head injuries. And she was lying in this squalor. Now, I'm just going to sort of jump forward a little bit and let you and the listeners know that this particular woman had been a top matron in a psychiatric hospital. She'd had a nervous breakdown. It's important that we talk about this now.
Sure. You don't want to like give it as a reveal at the end? Okay.
No, I want you to all know that she'd lived in this house. She'd had a nervous breakdown. You ready for this?
Yeah.
She lived in the kitchen for 30 years. She never left the house. So she retired, and she would have been in her late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah.
She was a raging alcoholic. Every single cupboard, drawer, shelf, room, cabinet, everywhere was just littered, but neatly stacked with bottles of alcohol right. that had been consumed. So what happened was she didn't have any money worries, so she pre-ordered and everything was home delivered. So all her food was home delivered, all the alcohol, and she lived, but she maintained her gardens, her lawns were all immaculately manicured.
How weird.
But she lived in this terrible, terrible isolation estate, and no one ever got to see her because she would never open the door. People would sort of basically feed stuff through the back door.
Yeah.
And she lived like this. And then one fateful day, there was so much urine and liquid in all the in the refuse that what had happened was she'd fallen slightly, and it looked as though someone had come in and bashed her skull in. Hence all, because I could see all this lumpy stuff on her skull, and it looked like brain matter.
Right.
And she was basically cut in two, which was fascinating. So we assumed that something terrible had happened.
What do you mean cut in two?
Well, I'll come to that.
Okay.
What happened was she had this frayed electrical cord, and imagine this. Somehow or other, the cord wrapped around her torso, and the plug in the wall had sort of pulled out slightly, and some water and something wet like a newspaper had actually formed across the two points at the top of the plug and had electrified the whole place became alive. So as she fell, the cord was tightening on her torso, but didn't blow, just didn't, the fuses didn't blow.
Yeah.
And it was as the tension and the heat and the wires would have become red hot, they were sort of cauterizing and cutting and cutting, and they eventually almost cut her in half. But then there was still the matter of the brain matter. And where had this brain, what had caused this blunt force trauma? And my colleague, who would not go in the room, might I add, because Muggins here in his beautiful coat and his new shoes was trudging through this to get to her. And you and the listeners will recall I made reference to my thermometer.
Yeah.
I had to roll her over. I had to pull her pants down and I had to shove a thermometer into her rectum. Do you know why I had to do that? Not because I wanted to. Oh, fuck. This is fucked up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. Guess why?
Why?
Because that's the part of the body that is the last to cool down.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So it remains warm.
Oh, the core temperature is kind of...
Correct.
Right.
So by me inserting a thermometer into her bottom...
You could tell roughly when she died?
Correct.
Okay.
And it was still... I had to then sort of examine it and...
So
it's pretty crook.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah, it's intense.
And very sad. But listen, how long ago had she died?
Within hours.
Right.
She still had some core temperature. But hear me out.
Yeah.
What about
the brain?
The brain. So I went back to my little box and I pulled out some special blood sticks that can, you know, if there's blood, it'll register. So I went back into the back over to her, and I got my little blood stick out, and I waved it across and sort of touched what appeared to be her brain, sort of stuck all over her head, and it wasn't brain matter. It was sweet and sour pork. So as she fell, a Chinese container of sweet and sour pork had managed to sort of, she'd taken that down as she fell, and it had managed to open up this container and landed on her head. So the sweet and sour pork that to me looked like her brain was actually sweet and sour
sweet
pork.
Sweet and sour pork. Okay.
Yeah. And then I began to, because I actually, I reached down and grabbed a bit of it and smelt it, and I realized that it was in fact sweet and sour pork, and you know, yeah.
So I guess I have one question for you. I have many questions, but one right now. For years after that, I know for a fact in the 90s you would take us to the same Chinese restaurant over and over, and sweet and sour pork was a regular fixture of your ordering.
Yes, I became obsessed with sweet and sour pork.
Do you think this case might be part of why?
Possibly.
What does it say about you as a person?
That I'm seriously demented.
Cool.
Love it. So, Paul, there's a poignant side to this story, aside from everything I've told you. You know that I went on to become an antique dealer, and we had two antique shops. And there are a couple of things from this story that I recall from the house, and one of the most amazing things, one of the most incredible pieces of furniture that I have ever seen in my life, and I've been to all the great museums around the world, she had this extraordinary cabinet in one of the rooms, and it had a big winder, and I'll never forget this. I wound this lever, and this incredible Art Deco cabinet that was in the shape of a rose opened up to reveal, with this incredible, intricate and complex mechanism, to reveal the most incredible 1920s cocktail cabinet. And that was just amazing. And then the other thing that I found quite distressing, I went into her bathroom and I realized that that was the only room in this entire house that she'd never, ever, ever used. And I saw something that to this day I found extraordinary, and I'll try and describe what I saw. Her bath that had never been used was full of silt because it had been dripping for 30 years. How amazing is that? The bathtub was full of the finest silt.
What's silt?
You know, it's a sediment that's in the water,
right,
that you'd never normally see, because this dripping for years and years and years, 30 years to be precise, had created this amazing slurry of this super fine mud in the bathtub. And it was just to look at it was just quite surreal.
So how does someone have beautiful, beautiful furniture and then surround it with refuse? Like, I know you're not a psychologist, but like, what do you think?
A total nervous breakdown. She never used the toilet.
Right.
Her toilet became her kitchen, and she lived and existed, and she became emaciated and introverted and had a colossal. But she'd had a very, you know, I made some inquiries and, you know, got to read some of the transcripts and the brief of evidence later on for the coroner, and she'd been the matron of a leading psychiatric institution in Sydney.
Do you think the job got to her?
I don't know, but something devastating had happened to her. And she became a recluse, the same as Howard Hughes.
Yeah.
And that's an incredible story, where his toenails grew out and then underneath and buried into the bottom of his feet.
Yeah, it was a bad
that's
situation.
That's pretty bad.
I remember seeing Howard Hughes' face on Time magazine. The face, like his face after they'd hauled him out of the room. It was really disturbing. There's something really... So listeners may or may not know this. Loose Units fans may know this, but Dad is basically practicing... like Zen. Like, Dad is a minimalist, so Dad actually tries to have less possessions. Do you think that's got anything to do with the fact that you encountered like a platinum grade hoarder?
Without a doubt. I only own 3 books, and they're all, funnily enough, on minimalism.
Yeah.
And
I mean, a real minimalist would only have 1, right?
Correct. Or commit that final one to memory.
Yeah, Fahrenheit 451 style.
Correct. But Having dealt with people's things over the years, I think, look, the listeners probably know that I went from the New South Wales Police Force, I went into the Work Cover Authority, where I investigated industrial accidents for a few years.
I think many people don't know that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So, and then I joined the New South Wales Fire Brigades and I became a firefighter and I did that for 10 years. And then, so that's a good 20 years of my life being involved with some pretty, you know, pretty shitty things.
Yeah.
I think you'll find that nurses, doctors, definitely emergency service personnel, i.e. AMBOs, paramedics, fireys and police, you know, I think, generally speaking, perhaps not as time evolves, but most people that join those jobs in the beginning, I genuinely believe they're a certain type of person and who actually really likes to help people and get in there and, you know, look after, sort of people.
Yeah.
And I think it's very satisfying. As an aside to this story, Paul, a tiny little story that you know that I deal in antiques.
Yes.
And, you know, what happened was a few months ago, I purchased a painting and the painting turned out to be stolen. And two nights ago, I had to go to Waverley Police Station and give a pretty full-on statement about how I'd come by this painting.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, stepping back into Waverley Police Station on a busy night was exciting.
Yeah.
And the senior police officer that I spent an hour with, an amazing senior constable, and he was really, really great. And we had an open and frank discussion about policing today.
Mm.
And I was telling him stories from the time when I was in the police force, and I told him about Loose Units. And in front of me, he got onto Spotify and downloaded Loose Units.
That's great.
And, you know, the thrill, the buzz of the police station was palpable.
Yeah.
And it was like being back in a police station for me many, many years ago. However, policing has changed dramatically. And it's a tough gig.
Yeah.
And you know, it's hard yakka and it's stressful. So if you're doing shift work and you're involved in a stressful job and you never, ever, ever get on top of things because it's just one thing after another. He was so snowed under, this guy. I felt really, really sorry for him. But you know, policing it's a universal you know, policing in Australia is the same as policing in Australia, as it is in Iceland, as it is in India. It's all policing and it's right there at the coalface, and it's hard, but it's satisfying. It's stimulating. You've got no idea what's going to happen. You go to work that day, what's going to happen? You just don't know.
But this woman was working at the coalface, as you said, dealing with damaged people.
Yeah.
In many cases, people where... Because one of the things about police is it's reactive a lot of the time.
Correct.
Like, you can try and do community outreach, but basically you're responding to a thing that has happened.
Yep.
Now, someone working in a mental hospital is quite often doing something very similar, in that the person is damaged mentally and they are hurting and you are responding to a crisis. You know what I mean? You don't get people who aren't having issues into a mental hospital.
No.
To provide a buffer against that. You are responding to a problem, right? Mm. Do you think stopping the job robbed her of that focus? And do you think that not working in emergency services anymore has had an effect on you? Or do you think you've been able to partition your brain and just put that aside?
Well, definitely partition my brain. But look, the good things about these podcasts is being able to relive and share the stories, because I really believe that these stories are worthy of sharing.
Mm.
And when I was preparing my notes in bullet form or bullet points for this whole next season,
yeah,
which is the same as what I did for the first season, you know, like I'm looking down at my notes and I've only got three or four words for each topic.
Yeah.
That's enough. That's all I need.
Yeah.
But, you know, these stories are really, really, I think they're great stories. They're stories that are interesting. They're a part of the fabric of Sydney's policing in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I think it's great to share them. And I think people are genuinely interested in these stories because they're real.
Do you think, how many people in emergency services do you think have stories? I mean, this woman who, you know, died alone, almost severed in half, clearly she saw some stuff.
Mm, yeah.
Do you think, Do you think it's helped you avoid spiraling into bad places by talking about what you went through? Do you think it's the healthy and right thing to do?
I think so. I think it's really important to talk. But, you know, there are different types of people in this world. My brother, Mark, for example, who also did, emergency services.
Yes.
But we're different people.
Yeah.
You know, my mother says to me, "Oh, John, you know, you've always been such a happy, cheerful guy." Now, that's my nature.
Mm.
I'm blessed to be a very positive person. But I'll tell you what, if you work in emergency services, as do lots of people that perhaps have a tendency to suffer from perhaps depression or anxiety, or, and there's no doubt about it, these jobs can bring on some pretty bad shit.
Yeah.
I guess from what I can gather and from what I've heard, the only thing worse than emergency services is going to war and seeing some bad shit.
Yeah.
Like, that really is, you know. Like, these Anzacs, they get together once a year and they, you know, they relive these stories, and it's, you know. But I guess for me to relive this is just to sit with you and the listeners and talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been a really enjoyable episode, but every episode of Loose Units, the podcast, we answer a question from a listener. Well, you know, Dad does. I kind of sit there agog. But, Dad, I thought, oh, God, this is a great question. This is from Karina Tasker. Has it ruined TV shows and movies for you? I know that ever since I studied forensic science, I can't watch anything the same anymore. So, has working in this field made watching your job on screen less enjoyable or less plausible for you?
It's a great question, and the answer is definitely yes, in that I'm not a super sleuth, but I do find that a lot of things we see, but perhaps this is the case for a lot of people, in that as time goes by, I find, you know, there's only a certain font of stories in the well, and I just think that quite often I find that I know... I'll never, ever, ever forget being at Kill Bill in that great scene where there's the car crash.
Yeah.
And they go over to that shop, and who's in the shop?
In Kill Bill?
The Gimp.
What?
Was that Kill Bill?
No.
Oh, shit.
It's Pulp
sorry.
Fiction.
Shit, sorry. Don't cut this. Just let me run.
But also
Pulp Fiction, you know how they have the car crash and they go to the shop and there's the Gimp and there's the guy with the sword and all that?
Yeah.
I actually started laughing in the cinema.
Why?
Because I knew what was going to happen.
Wait, what do you...
How bad's that?
At what point did you know?
As they walked towards the shop, I knew that something demonic and fucked up was going to happen.
Okay.
I laughed out loud.
Why was laughter the response you gave?
Because I knew what was going to happen. Now, how insane is that?
Right.
That's how my brain... That's the level that... Yeah, I think if you've been involved in some really dark stuff, there's only so many things... That, like, you know the old saying about it's all been done before?
Sure.
And it has. Everything's been done before.
Well, not all of it.
Well, a lot of it. I mean, okay, except for my stories, maybe. They're unique.
But, I mean, I think... I mean, I've watched you enjoy detective characters on screen.
Oh, look, I love the obscure. I love the singing detective. Yeah. I love the Nordic noir films. I think they're just...
You're a big Stranger Things fan as well.
And I love Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And I love Fargo.
How would you rate Jim Hopper, the head of Hawkins Police?
Out of 10?
Well, how would you rate him in terms of enjoyable watching?
I actually love him.
I think he's amazing.
He's cuddly and great.
But what do you like? So, I mean, obviously, I find that the most...
I worked with police like that.
Did you?
Bloody oath I did.
So, did you find the people that were slightly flawed but trying their best more enjoyable?
But he's a very good policeman.
He is a good cop. But you talk about, you know, people who come back from, you know, traumatic events. He, and you talk about the war. So, Jim Hopper in the story, in the series, is a Vietnam vet who came back and became a cop.
Yep.
And I think, how many people do you think come back from one traumatic profession and bound into another like yourself?
Oh, look, without a doubt. Paul, I've got a great yarn, just a quick one, but
sure.
It's to do with, I'm not going to talk about, because it's really to do with our family, Paul, but I've got to be careful what I say here, but through someone in our family that had close association with someone that had been in a war situation, that particular person, to get their jollies, comes back and works emergency E&R in London on night shifts.
Really?
Yeah. So, my point being that... Sometimes people get a fix. Like, adrenaline's very powerful. It's a very powerful drug. You know, if you could bottle it and pump it into you, you'd be sort of whacked out.
Yeah.
So people are always chasing. You know that when I, from a very early age, I used to chase adrenaline. Mm. I did skydiving. I did freediving. When I was three, I got my pop gun and my little Wellingtons as a three-year-old and went out to shoot a king brown snake on a sheep station. So I, from a very, very early age, I had this continual desire to chase the fix. You know, barefoot water skiing, emergency services. It, you know, it's in, and now I get my jollies, my thrills,
yeah,
out of wheeling and dealing in antiques.
Really,
and it's thrilling.
Is it?
Fucking oath, it is.
Well,
I love it because I buy something and it could be worth a squillion. Generally, it isn't.
Sure,
but it's the chase. It's the fun. It's the thrill. It's the excitement. You know, we all derive pleasure,
yeah,
in different ways. And you know, I mean, people that are, you know, older than other people, they don't necessarily just turn off their fun valve. You know, they're still, you know, you're still seeing things through the same eyes. You know, people don't sort of lose their mojo, so to speak.
Let me close on this note. When you went to that police station the other night,
mm,
and you were there and it was busy and it was pumping, you, yep, talked to that cop.
Yep.
Did you feel that itch?
I couldn't get over the incredible amount of gear each policeman wears, police person. It's incredible. Like the gear, the bulletproof vest,
yeah,
the taser, the low slung holster, the speed loaders. You know what that is?
Yeah.
Like extra ammo.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible. I mean, one hopes they're incredibly fit because just to carry all that extra stuff. Yeah. Like they walk out to their police cars now with bags of stuff. Like just, it's incredible. And look, yeah, it was exciting.
But would you do it again?
Would I join the police force again?
Yeah.
Now or back then?
Now.
You know, there was a famous newsreader in Sydney and her dad joined the New South Wales Police Force in his 50s.
Mm.
Would I do it now? Definitely not.
What if you could pick your location?
No, never.
Really?
No, it's a part of my life and I ain't going back. Because you know what? When I was a policeman, it was fun and exciting.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like frontier. Like it was, we kind of made the rules up as we went along. We had rough guidelines, but it was really exciting. When I told this senior constable 2 nights ago at Waverley about some of the things we got up to, his jaw dropped. He couldn't believe it. He said, those days are long gone, for better or worse.
Well, thankfully, people can relive them by listening to Loose Units, the podcast.
Mm.
So, join us next week for another episode. And also, 1 month to go until our huge Father's Day live episode of Loose Units at the Toff in Town in Melbourne. Tickets are selling very, very fast, so make sure you grab them ASAP. I am deadly serious. You do not want to miss out on this. It'll be Dad and me on stage. We'll be signing and selling copies of the book. It's going to be huge. Plus, we will be giving away limited edition Loose Units temporary tattoos. It's a long story. So head to thetoffintown.com/gigs or head to the Loose Units Facebook page. And a special shout out to everyone over in the Loose Units discussion group. We love your work. Loose Units is proudly presented by Pillow Talk Productions.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.